Well, it's an old railway arch that looks like an old railway arch, but it's got these very surreal kind of buffers in here that give it, I don't know kind of how to describe it. It's just kind of a little universe unto itself, and then every few minutes you'll hear a train go by, which gives its whole existence its own theme tune, I suppose.
Tucked underneath one of the large brick arches of the Dart railway line north of Connolly Station in Dublin is the busy Guerrilla Studios. Run by a devoted team headed up by John Spud Murphy, this atmospheric and ambient space feels pretty special. Over the past year, Spud Murphy invited Spin Alt to record Guerrilla sessions exclusively for our radio show. Now, I've invited some of the residents of Guerrilla Studios back to talk about the space, the Spud, and the buzz of working here. Over the course of the show, we'll hear sessions by Lynched Lancome, Rossangano Family, Fixity, and Sorica Richardson. We'll also hear contributions by artists Katie Kim, The Jimmy Cake, and 10 Past 7. For Spin Alt on Spin Southwest, my name is Ray Wingnut, and this is our Guerrilla Studios special.
Characteristic of those early 80s models, so really good. Nice chorus and nice delay. Okay.
No, tell us about when you first got here, Spud. What was this place when you first got here?
Okay, so when we first arrived, it was, I think there was a garage or a guy who sold tires was in here before us. So it was just a big, greasy, horrible, dank, covered in cobwebs, smelly place covered with, I'm pretty sure there was page 3 models put up on the wall that were there for about 15 years. It was pretty disgusting. But the room was big and in an arch, and there was a lot of reverb, and kind of got excited about it straight away. Then a couple of weeks after we started to get work on it, I was informed that the trains would only be passing over a couple of times a day, but realized that it were pretty much every 15 minutes. So yeah, had a bit of a nervous breakdown, but we're after getting through it, and yeah, hasn't destroyed anything as of yet anyway, so.
And you couldn't live without it, definitely not, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's hilarious when you think about only over 5 years of walking into a greasy hovel of a place with page 3 girls on the walls, with trains running overhead, and then 5 years later, the head of Rough Trade is in listening to mixes of an album that's going to come out in Rough Trade in a couple of months. So, yeah, hilarious. It's amazing.
What I was going to say, sorry about that, was just that we're actually under a bridge, you know, with a dart going over us, and that's turned into a place where you can make music and art and, like, you know, there's ideas and imagination, and if somebody else saw this space without all this stuff in it, they wouldn't imagine it at all, you know? And to think what you can actually turn from being an empty bit under a bridge into, you know, something that there's so, albums, there's people touring the world because of this place, or there's people that have gotten, you know, years of music out of their minds into other people and inspiring people and all that. And it's you know, we're in here now and it's set up, we're used to it, you know, but actually what it is it's an empty space that's now full up with amazing stuff, and there's a lot of output coming out of it and all that. So that was the one other thing I was going to say.
then we'll walk into the main room. So you'll probably hear a bit of a reverb. Yeah, it's a... how to describe... it's like a semicircle, I suppose. That makes sense. Ground is flat and then it's arched the whole way up around. I don't think it's a geometrically perfect circle, but because it's made out of brick, there's like lots of rough edges, which diffuses the sound quite a bit. And then because it's such an old place, the back wall has half the plaster missing off it. So there's also rough edges there, which allows for the sound to bounce around the room happily and not create too many sounding waves. When we initially moved in here first, it was really reverby, like especially if you put a drum kit in, you could barely hear any. It was just all reverb. So a band I was recording at the time called Turn from Waterford, one of the guys is a really good carpenter and he offered to do all the soundproofing for me. So he made these incredible baffles, which one side of them soaks up low-end energy and then the other side reflects high-end energy. So with those, we have quite a versatile space. Have to move them around to make things sound correct sometimes, but like in general it's a pretty good room and everything sounds pretty good in here. There's a train. Ugh. So yeah, this is the inside of a baby grand piano that we use for a reverb. We kind of put a contact mic onto the wood during recording and we also mic up the strings, but it has a very long decay if you just hear what... yeah, so it goes on for quite a while. Works really nice on snares, sometimes on vocals. Quite difficult because it's an old baby grand, so all the strings are out of tune, but they kind of resonate together weirdly, so it's cool.
I think though, like with Spud, one thing that when we first kind of met him and started kind of working with him was that he's really into just throwing everything at the wall and seeing what comes back. Like, so, you know, I mean, I think one of the first things when we recorded down in Waterford, we had the bass cab in a kitchen and he put a little bit of water into the sink and then mic that. But it's all this stuff that even if you're like going, oh, I wouldn't mind trying this little thing out, he's so up for it, like, or he'll suggest whatever. But so for him to have a space like this, which sounds so good anyway, is absolutely amazing. Look. Pick up this boxy.
Rusingano family, Gorilla Sessions, big up man like Ray Wingnut, and big up all the crew.
Not allowed. You can't say that that's not allowed. You can't say that that's not allowed. Then guess what? I said it out loud. That's not allowed. You can't say that that's not allowed. You can't say that that's not allowed.
Like anything, you know, if you're a professional soccer player, you're going to have to understand the soccer industry. And that's something that we're trying to understand, the music industry, yeah. Or we feel like we're getting a better understanding of it. But it's never going to 100% control what it is that we do. And again, it's an interesting time in music as well, where you're like, oh, that's what everyone else is doing. Do you know what? Let's go off and do something completely different and yeah. See how you get on doing it. And if it fails, it's not the end of the world. But if you find that sometimes you can carve out your own niche, I think, by taking that approach towards it as well.
Yeah, don't be afraid to take risks. I suppose that's the one thing that we have to remind ourselves all the time, because yeah. Sometimes you can get too comfortable doing what's working as well. But every now and then it's worth taking a risk here and let people say, ah, that's terrible. Like, why did you even try that? And
so it was just fun.
We did no preparation for our performance in a while.
Yeah,
we don't even know what we're doing.
You gotta keep it fun. If it's not fun, then really, like,
I don't know. I would hate to be doing something then so formulaic. It's just like, dude, the reason why this is an amazing thing that people go and do is because it's so much fun.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean? And on that, let's say, like, that's a very simple and a beautiful philosophy of just like the one thing we want to maintain is the Russ and Gano vibe.
Yeah.
But what, let's say there's a big gig tonight. It's in Vicar Street. This is, you know, Dublin, Ireland's premier venues. It's an absolutely brilliant place and it means a lot to a lot of people. And is tonight your first night playing in Vicar Street?
It is.
I've never been in Vicar Street.
You've never been in Vicar Street?
I saw Kendrick.
Okay, so yeah, this is big. So what is the Russ and Gano vibe, very, very simply?
Should I start?
Go for it.
Okay. Can you feel the vibe in the room at the moment?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Russ and Gano vibe. You know, it's like the way we're talking now, you are in Russ and Gano family right now because it's become a conversation and we're all having a chat. We're having a chat. It's never going to be a case of like, okay, Ray asked that question now.
Put on the shades.
Yeah, it's like,
don't ask that question.
Don't ask that question. By the way, Ray, before we start this interview, you can't ask that, okay? So we let everything happen in a way naturally. So we don't know, like, if the majority of people in that venue tonight are going to be our fans. We don't know that. And most of the time, we don't know going into any venue if it's going to be, unless we're playing Limerick, because you know that we're close to home.
Yeah.
So, we're going to go on stage, and the one thing we rely on is our chemistry. If it's great, if it's there, then you're going to feel it's infectious. The crowd will get it. They will catch it like fever. And then you can tell if you're in there, you're like, everything that's happening on that stage, you can tell that the crowd in their own way are channeling that.
Rusangano, not Rusango, not Fernango, not Rastangano. It's Rusangano.
Stories I can't tell. Should I keep it in my heart or my brain cell? But if I give it to the place, I guarantee sell. But it doesn't preach nowadays, that's doing pretty well. It gets started when it's getting in fair. I wanna get a better job, but my name ain't fair. So I said it for weeks that boss says,
and then roller coaster in your fun fair.
I will work so hard till they can't compare me. I will do everything in plain like
Noah.
But I believe in getting it back twice like Joe. But I'm rinsing, I can't stop. Spotted the heat comes and all of that we talk above. Yeah. Now I'm all about redemption songs that I bought, but I'm early from Togo, citizen by law. Not just me, not everybody. See, my daddy was a refugee, so I'm free. I know a lot of people pay too hard this. I play the seal them by the time they find me. When the end of the tunnel, cause hills and abyss. I cry for the souls who died to find peace.
A million other people hate to practice. From me being average, and I reply this. I don't have to be like you.
Never.
I don't have to be like you.
Never.
I don't have to be like you.
I look like you to be cool like you.
You don't have to be like me.
Never.
You don't have to be like me.
Never.
You don't have to be like me.
Or act like me to be grand like me.
Because we're all unique.
Yeah, so basically you got the mix together and the show went out the following week. And then guys got on to me on the day after the show going, hey man, wow, that was amazing. Do you mind if we call in? We're thinking about releasing that song now because it's the best recording we have of it. So yeah, so that was how I met them. And they just kept asking me stuff. And then they were talking about the next album and were asking if I'd be interested in mixing it. And of course I was. And yeah, and then they were coming in demoing stuff before they went to record it, and they were telling me about how much of a nightmare they were having on tour because of engineers not understanding what they needed in their monitors. So yeah, I ended up saying I'd give them a hand with that and do a few gigs with them, and I've been on the road with them now for over a year. Played in all sorts of venues and parts of the world.
Enjoyed if I go to Dublin, I have a wonderful time. And that time is now with me again with this marvellous band from Dublin. We welcome Lynched.
For me, it was totally surreal to be like, Jesus, I'm playing a tin whistle on Jules Holland. Like, how did that happen? You know?
You see, this is, and I'd be absolutely right beside you in the sense that I've just pure reverence for that show. Everything that it stands for, the way they treat music, the way they treat musicians, the way they position musicians together, it's extraordinary. So how did you find out that you were going to be on there?
We got an email.
Yeah, it was basically an email. So, yeah, you're on in 3 weeks' time.
Yeah, it was no
notice.
I hope
you're free on this day. Cause you.
But where's the hookup?
We knew we were going on tour in November. So we did the thing where you just send out CDs to everyone on radio stations and kind of like as much publicity as possible.
Yeah, because we'd never played really. We'd never played in England. So we're like, oh, we better like try get people knowing the name at least, you know.
And whatever way, the CD ended up in, what's your man's name, the producer?
Mark Cooper.
Mark Cooper ended up with a copy of it. And he's sound actually, he was chatting to us in backstage before we went on. And he said one of the reasons actually is that there's an incredible string band cover on the album and he's a big fan of them. And he was like, oh. So then he listened to it and was mad about it. And that was that.
Okay, so you go into BBC Studios, you're going to meet Jules, you're going to be on later, you're doing the live session on the Tuesday night. Was that it?
Was it Tuesday?
Yeah, the live session and then it went out on the Friday, the longer version.
So what was that like, sitting in the studio with Burt Bacharach and Clifford Mods all in one room?
Bonkers.
Insane. It was so strange.
It's bizarre, yeah. You have to just pretend that's not going on just to get through it. Yeah. You know, just kind of block it all out and you're going, right, it's all good, it's all good. And then afterwards you're just going...
Like, I'd say adrenaline-wise, it's the equivalent to doing, like, skydiving or something. Because actually your body just starts to go, like, mental and you have to kind of keep it under wraps so that you don't freak out. Like,
I became very aware of my own existence.
Yeah. Painfully aware.
But it was, like, after I think the second thing we did, I managed to calm down and just kind of enjoy it. But initially it was...
The way they do it is they film the... So there's the Friday show. And they filmed that before the live show. So you've actually filmed two songs already or whatever.
Which I think is really smart way to do it, because it means by the time you're going live, you're a bit more sort of chilled out.
And as well, we were the only band to do our sound check that day, because usually they get the bands in the day before, but they knew that we couldn't afford a hotel. So they brought us in that day to get the sound check done. So we're sitting in the same studio all day, sound checking over and over, practicing the songs over and over again. So actually by the time it got to the live filming, you know, we'd kind of been through it so many times that we had it down, you know.
Yeah, so we did the tour like the next month in November, and a lot of gigs were packed out. And there was obviously people coming up afterwards. Oh, I saw you on Jules Holland. And that's kind of like, I reckon if we hadn't been on that, I don't know, it probably would have been empty. Or like a quarter full or half full. Most of them were packed out.
What will we do when we have no money? Oh, true lovers, what will we do then?
Like, I heard this theory recently that I really liked. You're going to have to bear with me now, okay? Okay. So I heard this theory, and it was by the comedian Dylan Moran. And he talked about when you're creating something to relate to other people. And he has a theory, he calls it the fortune teller theory, right? So he writes songs about anything that you'd speak to a fortune teller about. So if it's money, if it's love, if it's life, if it's career or anything like that, you know what I mean? He says that if you want to connect with somebody, you got to do the universal things. And the universal things are the things that you'd ask a fortune teller.
Yeah.
What do you think of that, huh?
I think that's pretty true. I went to a fortune teller one time in New York when I was pretty drunk, and I believed, she told me all of this stuff, and I was like, wow, I'm going to be so rich. It's all going to be brilliant. I paid her $20 in like literally like the window of a shop. Next morning, I was like, that was a waste of $20. But I think that's pretty true, because I think almost every song is about like one of three or four things. But what I always try to remind myself when I'm writing is not necessarily a rule, but what I always come back to is like, if I write something that is feels honest and true for myself, it's going to be true for a lot of other people. And the one thing that people say a lot about to me when they talk about my songs is that like they'll hear it and they'll say, oh, like I know that night that you're talking about, or I know that friend that you're talking about. And I think the only reason that is because I'm telling truth, and whatever is true for me is not necessarily going to be that different from a lot of other people. So I think I'll write songs in a very specific way about specific things, but the actual bigger meaning behind it is something that's quite universal. Underneath the cool lampshade, I was lying to your face. I didn't steal your liquor, maybe we just have the same taste. It was a birthday party, we were screaming happy birthday. I'd already ruined your night, you didn't even know my name. Oh, what a way for us to start. Take it as a sign you should entrust me with your heart. Why do you wanna go and be my friend? I'm only gonna ruin your night again. Stirring up a hurricane. Oh, it is a losing game. You should just forget my name, oh.